Hey, everybody, it's the Daniel Scott, and you probably remember me from the Daniel Scott show that aired in, I guess it was the year 2019.
Pre-COVID,
that's right. And we are back, or I am back, and the show is even better because I have a wonderful, awesome co-host now for this podcast, and her name is Glenda Walker.
Hey.
And so basically, we are going to bring you everything that we discussed in episode 2 of the Daniel Scott Show. I don't know if you got a chance to go listen, but if you didn't, you can go back and listen. But anyway, we had a great rapport. It was a really good conversation, and I think that with our experiences and our friendship and our all of those things that fall under that hat, it's going to make this a great podcast. So
the new podcast is FYI for your information by the Daniel Scott and Glenda.
That's right. And let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. So this podcast is going to be amazing. Daniel is a serial entrepreneur, a great friend, and just overall amazing person. So the two of us together, you're going to get a lot of information, but we're just going to try to be ourselves and make you laugh, but also be informative. So when we say for your information, you take it as you like, for your information, and we're definitely going to talk about it.
Yeah, and we're going to have some great people on the podcast. I mean, we have a great lineup for this year and some interesting stories. So I think it's going to be really fantastic.
Yeah, but before we, you know, get into what this year is going to look like, we need to catch y'all up on what we've been doing.
Oh, absolutely.
So I don't know. You want to go first?
Of course. Okay, so what have I been up to? Wow. Okay, so I survived the pandemic. I came out unscathed, that's for sure. It was, from a business standpoint, it was actually very lucrative for me. My businesses thrived. So I had a really, really okay time during 2020, and it wasn't bad at all.
So can you share or give a little insight as to why you made it through the pandemic? Because I came from a corporate banking world, and a lot of businesses did not make it. So what made you guys so special? What made you so special during this pandemic?
Well, you know what? I think a lot of it was the industry that we're in, because we're in a technology industry. And Lord knows that you can never do without IT, even when things are all falling apart, you still need your computer to work.
Oh, yeah. People will have a heart attack. They'll sell their kids. They'll give up blood. If their phones or computers are not working, it's the end of the world. So
right.
I guess that made your business still thrive and flourish during this pandemic.
Yeah. And you know, also what was really beneficial to us is the fact of the relationships that we had developed with our customer base. We've had customers for a very long time. So they were still calling us during the pandemic.
I won. You talk about very long time. Oh, we go way back. So he was troubleshooting my mom's computer. Every time she clicked on something, she got a virus. And I would have to call him and be like, guess who has another virus?
And for those of you that don't know, Glenda and I went to college together, and we were hell on wheels in college. You know, we've always had this great, I guess, forces united attitude against everything.
Oh, my God. Listen, y'all. He's sugarcoating it. We gave those professors hell. I mean,
yeah.
We were adult learners. We went back to school to get our degrees, and we were paying for it. Paying, of course, more than your typical state college. So when I say we gave them hell, they probably have pictures on their wall saying Daniel and Glenda, most remembered students. Because if it was something that didn't sound right, all of the class came to us because they knew we were going to speak up about it. We challenged them. So we gave them hell. But it was good. We met each other, and we've been together ever since.
That's right. And who would have thunk it? You know, someone from the north and me from the south.
Brooklyn.
Charleston.
You know, so it just clicked, and we've been together since. And we've been in each other's professional lives, in each other's personal lives. He can't get rid of me. He don't want to get rid of me. And I can't get rid of him. And I don't want to get rid of him.
This is one of those friendships that I'm sure most people can relate to. It's where you can basically disappear for 6 weeks or 6 months or 6 years and then come back together and just start talking like you saw each other yesterday.
That's funny because I think I posted or I saw a meme on Instagram the other day saying, I'm not one of them friends that's going to text you every day. I'm not one of those friends that's going to talk to you every day. But I am one of those friends that if something go down, I'm pulling up.
Right. So. Scheduled to start this podcast again with you and start venturing back into acting as well. I did do a few films during the pandemic. And
Yes, he did. And I'm doing that on purpose because he had a role that he played a stuttering guy. I forget if he was a bar owner or something like that. And when I tell you, I was like, okay, Daniel, I thought you stuttered, like, for real, like, I mean, he did very well in that role.
Yeah, Glenda was my date to the premiere.
We were on a red carpet. Yeah.
It was a very, very fun experience. Like I said, I mean, acting and podcasting and all of those things are my creative outlet. You know, business first. I'm an entrepreneur at heart, so I'm all about making that coin.
So how many businesses do you own? Are you involved in? I know you do a lot of coaching and mentoring. So kind of give the audience a little bit of, you know, some more background on your business savvy.
Okay, so I started, I became an entrepreneur at the age of 26, and I'm 45 now. And so I started out.
Okay, y'all, I'm not telling my age.
Yeah, I just like to throw it out there. I mean, it kind of gives people a perspective about how many years I've got under my belt. I started out with my best friend doing a technology firm, and that kind of grew. That was the base business. After I really learned how to be a small business owner, and, you know, my degree is in small business management, and I just started growing from there. You know, a lot of people would come to me because I have a big network. You know this. And mm-hmm. People would ask me, hey, how do I do this? How do I do that? And I kind of formulated a consulting firm out of all of that. So I have my hand in probably 6 businesses right now.
Wow.
Where I just help people grow. I try to do my best because I think and you would understand this, I think where businesses fail the most is not understanding the administrative side of their business.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I know that just, again, from my corporate background that, you know, business owners, they know their craft. They know how to cut hair. They know how to mow lawns. They know how to build buildings. But that office work and administrative stuff and invoicing and collection, it just falls apart. The craft is important, but running a business from the administrative side is even more important because you have to do certain things to stay open.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's what I tell everybody. I said, you know, by the end of your relationship with me, you're going to be able to read a P&L and a balance sheet because those are really important.
That's a profit and loss statement.
That's
and
right.
A balance sheet. That is I call it your business report cards.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's
when you understand
how I identify it.
So Glenda and I like to tell people, you know, we're going to hopefully with this podcast give people the tools and the resources to turn passions into profit, turn those street smarts into business smarts, mm-hmm. and live their best life.
Yeah, a lot of street smarts and then a lot of turning that into a business because I really kind of believe that if you can be successful on the street, hustling, whatever you're hustling, mm-hmm. you can be successful at business. You just have to adapt some more tools and resources to get you there.
That's right. Yeah. So that's me in a nutshell, Mrs. Walker. Why don't you explain to us where you have been and where you're at and where you're going?
Wow. So I was on episode 2. I had the woo-hoo. Most views. Woo, woo. No, I really don't know, but I was on episode 2 and I really talked about my background in banking. So I come from a retail and commercial banking background. And since then, at that time, I was happy. I was in corporate. I was happy. I was a commercial banker with a, you know, pretty large bank that just had a big merger. I was happy. I got all the perks. You know, I had work-life balance as much as I could have. I was client entertaining. I was doing everything. My paycheck was decent. I wasn't mad about that. I always wanted more.
Don't we all?
But a merger came up, you know, and here's another merger. I've been in banking total of 26 years. I said I'm not going to tell my age, but do the math. So 26 years, I started banking when I was 19. So I've been in banking for 26, 27 years. And another merger. Okay, great. My manager at this point, she was cool. She's like my mentor. You know, I could go to her and tell her anything. I could say repeat it or don't repeat it, and just that would happen. Well, she knew I wanted her job. That was no secret. You know, she knew that. You know, my colleagues and teammates knew that I wanted her job, and for the most part, I think everybody was rooting for me. Well, with mergers, you know, people move. So the leadership that I was used to here in local Atlanta, most of them got moved to North Carolina. So now I'm with this bank that we had a friendly merger with that I don't know all of the leadership now. I haven't had time to build those relationships and that rapport and let them know, you know, how I do business. You know, they know I was a top performer, but that's all they knew. But right. They didn't know Glenda.
Right.
You know, so she moved. My manager moved. And here starts the interview process. Of course, I raised my hand. Yep, I want the job. Feeling very confident. Know I had some other competitors, including someone on my team. No big deal. I'm Glenda. I got this. You know, I know what I'm doing. Went through the panel, a series of interviews. Long story short, didn't get the job. I'm like, damn. Didn't get the job. I was a little crushed. But I said, okay. So I didn't get the job here in Atlanta, but was recommended for a job in Baltimore. Now, this is going back up north, y'all, to the cold and snow. I mean, you know, I didn't want to move, but I was ready to go up into that corporate ladder, get into middle management, because I was in lower management throughout my career in banking. Long story short, again, I didn't get the job. So at this point, you have a 21-year tenured employee that's a top performer that didn't get two roles that she knew she was qualified for. I just was like, you know what? What's the saying now? The big resignation? We're in the big resignation?
Yeah, definitely.
I was part of the big resignation. And I decided to take my skills and my talents of helping small businesses grow, getting financing through this one particular bank. Now I can go to anybody, any bank I want to get a client help that they need. So I left. I left, y'all.
Which is good.
I know, it's great. But, I should have been did it. Oh my God.
Let's be
totally transparent here. Even though you had those corporate jobs, you also had side jobs.
Yes,
so,
yes.
we're all about the hustle here.
Through my 21-year career at this one particular bank, you know, 26, 27 as a whole, I, you know, had owned businesses throughout. And also I was of course, the key person that family and friends called for business information, for mortgage information, I don't care what it's for. They just called me and I always answered. I always answered the call expecting nothing in return, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So once the bank said, you ain't good enough for us, I was like, I'm out. So I took some time off. The pandemic really helped out a lot because I wasn't commuting to work every day, wasn't paying for lunch. You know, so many of us saved money during that time. So These 2 years, we weren't eating out. We were eating at home. We were stuck, so you couldn't go, you know, shop as much, even though Amazon, I swear I was getting a package every day, y'all. Probably twice a day, maybe.
Why the stock is at $2,000-something.
That's a whole other story we got to talk about because I'm going to get it during that stock split, y'all. But I was able to save money. And even though I didn't know I was leaving at that time, I started paying down debt. Mm-hmm. I started paying down debt and getting my debt so low. So when the time came for me to make the decision to leave, mind you, I had the support of my husband and the support of my family. I didn't have that on my shoulder to say, oh, I have too much debt, so I can't quit. Or, oh, this, I can't do this. You know, I was able to make that decision without the extra baggage. And I just took the leap.
Right.
You know, so I left in June of 2021. Mm-hmm. And it's been amazing, guys. It's been amazing.
Yeah.
The great thing is that I have not done much marketing, but my old clients have been calling me. So with mergers with banks, banks tend to change their underwriting and lending policies. Mm-hmm. So because they've done that, a lot of clients that I onboarded at that particular bank, now they can't get more money, or they can't get their loan renewed, or they can't pull cash out of their investment property. So they're calling me like, Glenda, I know you're gone, but I need help. And I'm like, I'm here to help you. So
that's right.
So that's, you know, that's my story. Pandemic, it's been good.
Yeah, and now you're doing your own thing.
I am doing my own thing, helping small businesses
now,
grow.
Wouldn't you agree with me that when you own your own business, you work harder, but it doesn't feel like you're working
correct,
harder?
Correct, correct, correct.
It's your own.
Yeah, you work harder, but it's a different work harder than working harder for someone else.
Right.
And at a corporate job with corporate structure. So I say that to say, it's rewarding when you're doing it for yourself.
That's true.
So you don't complain about answering the phone at 7 o'clock at night because one of your clients are calling you.
Right.
You're actually excited. Yeah, you're excited to get the call and you're going to answer it.
Right.
But, you know, you still have to create some work-life balance and things like that. You know, I still have to be aware of my family life and my husband and make sure I'm not answering the phone at 9 o'clock at night because as business owners, you know, Daniel, something to pop up in your head in the middle of the night, and you're like, oh, I need to call my banker, or oh, I need to call this vendor, or I need to call somebody. But you're not thinking about that other person is either in bed or eating dinner, and you're calling their phone.
Right.
But I get it as a business owner. Those things, that's when you have time to wind down.
Right.
So you're winding down. You're thinking about your day. You're thinking about what's coming up, what projects you have coming up, and then something pops up in your head.
Yep. Yeah.
So I get it. I don't get offended. I just don't answer the call. So they know I'm not going to answer, but I'll return their call the next day.
Right. I've gotten really good about that, about turning off my phone at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Like I'm done. At 5 o'clock, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. Everybody knows that, and I'm done.
You answer my call.
I'll answer you.
So one of the biggest things that I saw during the pandemic, which I absolutely love, it opened a lot of people's eyes. One thing, it opened people, and I call the 2020 the year that never was, because I feel like we just kind of, you know.
It just came and disappeared,
right? Right, because we couldn't really do anything.
Right.
Nobody has any great things to share, like a great vacation or anything. One thing I did notice is people realized, one, that working from home is a reality, and how companies fought against that. Like for so long.
Yes.
And then you see all these people transition to home so quickly and efficiently.
Yes.
And that
was
amazing.
Productive.
Absolutely.
You guys, okay, so 2020 was the PPP year for banks, okay? So it was the first rounds of PPP. And
Paycheck Protection Program.
The SBA Paycheck Protection Program. Thank you.
Yeah.
So when, even though we were working from home, I was rolling out of bed at 7 o'clock in the morning, making my coffee and logging in, even though I technically wasn't supposed to log in till 8:30. But, and then just having a computer on all, you know, afternoon working, and find myself still at my computer at 7 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
So that big thing about people are not going to work because they're home. Actually, we worked harder when we were home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We worked harder. It was easy just to go in and, oh, let me just load up the laptop real quick and take care of two things. And then next, you know, 5 hours later, you're still working.
Right. So we know that it can happen. And so I really didn't see the urge to push people to get back into the office. And I'm seeing that more this year than I did last year, of course. But this year, I'm seeing a real push to get people back in the office. I don't understand the necessary
Well, you got to think of that. Well, the necessity is business, is the economy. Because if you think about it, how many corporations downsized and allowed people to work from home but didn't renew their corporate leases? Okay.
Right.
So they gave up lease space. That is a direct correlation to the economy.
Right.
So how many businesses or corporations that allowed their employees to work from home sold real estate? Because they didn't need it anymore.
Right.
That means they don't need office furniture. That means they don't need computers. That means they don't need you know, A to Z. So that directly affected the economy as well.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I didn't understand the necessity to get people back in a building. Why not leave them at home?
But why leave them at home when if we go back, the employees go back in the building, that floor that the company was leasing for $30,000 a month, that money's now gone.
Right, I got
it. It's gone because they didn't renew their lease.
Right.
So in my old world, corporate world, that whole building, we had four floors. No one's there now.
Right.
Because of working from home.
Right.
So that landlord no longer has that rental income now.
Right.
Oh, so, I get what you're saying.
You
yeah.
Know, you see?
Yeah. Well, and another great thing that I saw come out of the pandemic is that people realize that they could turn their craft into profit.
Oh, my God. So I am. Okay. I can speak on this because I left my job, you know, and right. I took a leap of faith. But it warms my heart so much. I love it when people, as people say, turn their passion into profit. Mm-hmm. I just love it. I'm pro-entrepreneur. My dad was an entrepreneur. So it was always in my blood. Just for me to just step out and do it full-time was a whole nother thing. I was forced, you know, another party forced me to do it. But I just love to see people doing that. And I agree with the term, the great resignation.
Yeah.
This last year, 2 years, people just was like, listen, I value my time. My company cut the roll down and making me do three people's job for the same amount of money. I could bake cakes.
I think it's the evolution of technology that made that possible. Like,
coming from a techie, I can see that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because, I love TikTok. And the great thing I see on TikTok all the time is all of these small business owners, these stay-at-home moms, yeah. these dads, people just using their creativeness and selling it on these apps.
Yes.
And that is so awesome. And like you got websites like Etsy where it's a conglomerate of
yes.
small business owners.
Well, it allows small business owners now to literally touch the world, be global.
Yes.
At one point in time in my career, I had a brick and mortar. This was before the big, this was before technology really, well, this is before, in my opinion, the United States released the technology for us to advance. That's a whole nother topic.
Right.
But I had a brick and mortar, and I only could reach the people in 300 blah, 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 in this zip code or
right.
whatever surrounding zip codes. But now you have people that are tired of corporate, that they haven't quite left yet, but they're figuring it out. How can I reach the masses? And they are really taking advantage of all the social media platforms. So kudos to you all.
Yeah, I just think it's absolutely wonderful. And if you have something that you can sell online, if you're a crafter or anything like that, a wood maker, anything, you know, there is a market for you because there's
a market
for
everybody. Well, even services. I sell services.
And I
don't meet with half of my clients. I might never meet them. Now, I'm still an old school banker. I still have the old school banker mentality where I want to take my client out to lunch and wine and dine them and build rapport and a relationship
right.
with them.
I'm sure they enjoy a free lunch.
Oh, of course they do. Food is the heart to the soul. So I'm still that person that likes that in-person and relationship building, which is a big part of any business is building relationships. But sometimes I never meet my clients. I can have 10 or 12 Zoom calls with them until we get to the closing table. If it's local, I'm there. If it's not a local closing, and I have some clients that I'm working for deals on in Chicago and New Jersey. So technology is allowing that.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't for technology, I wouldn't be able to have clients all over.
That's right. That's right. So yeah, so that's what this podcast is all about. This is about us sharing our knowledge and experiences and basically having talks.
Yes. This is us having talks.
Yes.
But making it meaningful, hopefully.
Absolutely. Because we hope that, you know, you go to our website or go to our Facebook page or go to our Instagram page and you leave us messages or questions of things that you would like us to cover. Because I think we can cover just about anything.
And what are those social media handles? Daniel?
I mean, it's Daniel and Glenda, of course.
Yeah.
Daniel and Glenda on Instagram, Daniel and Glenda on Facebook. The website's not up yet, so, you know, we got to wait for that.
Yeah, I'll leave that to my techie partner here.
We're on every platform, though.
Thank you. But yes, but, you know, the goal for us with this podcast is to provide information and resources to you. What we don't know, we don't know. If it's some a topic that we're not familiar with, we'll try to bring an expert in.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to even though we know a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Exactly. And let's not, I mean, you forgot to mention that, you know, Glenda does have an MBA.
Yes.
I only have a bachelor's, so, but I'm proud of that bachelor's.
That's right.
I fought for that bachelor's.
Oh my goodness, guys, that's a whole nother podcast too. But yes, no, we have degrees, but I always say there's a balance. So,
yes.
You know, somebody could have a, you know, a bachelor's, a master's, a PhD, but don't have that balance in real world experience. We have that balance with both.
And that's one subject I do want us to cover. If I, you know, because I'm a person that feels like I was robbed by the educational system and having student loans. And I really, you know.
Uncle Joe, you're supposed to be getting rid of all of our student loans.
People ask me all the time, do you think it was worth the degree? And I'm like, you know, I did my own thing. I think I really just bought my degree because.
You know what?
I don't know. I don't think it was. I think I did it just for personal goals. But then I'm like, I look at all the debt and the money that I paid for it.
Yeah. So I'm going to keep it real, y'all. So I went back for my bachelor's degree from my mom. That wasn't for me. I at one point in my life, I became a single parent at 19. I was away at college getting my degree and came home on break being all groany macaroni. And, you know, life happened. And I, you know, had a daughter, which I love her. She's amazing.
She and is absolutely amazing.
Yes. So I decided to go back to school and I said, I owe my mom this. Because when I told my mom that I wasn't going back, she just wrote a check to college. I was like, oops, sorry. She just wrote a check to them. So I feel that degree, you know, as parents, for all my parents out there, you all have these plans and visions for your children. I did want it, but as I got into my career in banking, I was like, I work hard. I don't need it. I was moving up without it.
Mm-hmm.
So my bachelor's degree was from my mom. And then I don't know, I fell and bumped my head and said, let me go back and get my master's and rack up another 60 grand, 70 grand in student loan debt. And that more was for me. That was to say, Glenda, you did this for you. Did it make a difference in my career with the company I was with? I'm not sure, but I think it gives you balance. You know, those critical thinking classes that you have, those psychology classes that you have, the business classes or whatever your area of concentration is, it does give you some balance and have you look at things in a logical way.
That's true, yeah.
Because you have to have, you know, logic with everything you do as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has to be a balance. So I don't think it's a waste of money. I think the country we live in should make it easier and not a financial burden for people to go to school. But I think it should be it's a balance.
So with what you just said, do you think that's more of a social aspect or more of an academic aspect? Because I get what you're saying and where you're going with that. But I honestly think that you can achieve that through networking, surrounding yourself with people that you like-minded people that business-wise of where you want to go or what you want to do, and just kind of absorbing that way than walking out of a class with 60 grand in debt.
Again, I'm gonna kind of meet in the middle with that. Okay. Do I think you have to have a degree to be successful? Absolutely not.
Right.
Absolutely not. I think you can do a lot, again, by your network, by people you surround yourself with, by, you know, getting certifications, which is a big thing now, and learning a trade, you know. So do I think you need a degree? No. But I think it does give you balance and allow you to think a little bit differently and approach things differently sometimes.
So with the generation, the younger generation now, do you feel like they are going to utilize social media tools in place of education?
Yes, and I think that sucks, honestly, because social media is what you make of it.
Right.
We all know half the stuff we see on there is not real or, you know, over-exaggerated. It's not. It's just not. And again, this is where I get back to my balance. Having that social media etiquette and that social media presence, but knowing to realize when things are not really what they are.
Right.
And you can't get that from social media.
Right.
You can get that from books and learning theory and logic, statistics, even though I don't think I ever used it, but statistics was something else. But you don't get that from social media, because if you think about the young people now, they think everything they see on there is real and it's true.
Right.
And what college taught you is when you did a paper and you listed your sources, if you listed the internet, you probably got an F. So it challenged you just to do research and think beyond that one source that you found.
And y'all, just a side note, our engineer, Preston, is probably in the demographic that we are talking about. And he's probably just shaking his head going.
He's not. he knows that I'm speaking some truth there. So, again, it has to be some balance for you to have the critical thinking skills to say, oh, I just saw this post on Instagram. Let me think logically to say, is that really something that can happen? Probably yes. Is that something that really did happen based on the person that's posting it, what you know about them, what you don't know about them? So it still has to be that balance. And I think all social media education, there's no balance.
I agree. I just was curious. I mean, I don't have kids, thank God. And I would probably be stressing out if I did. So God did not put that in the cards for me. And I thank you, Lord. I thank you every Sunday.
Listen, being a parent is hard, but it's definitely rewarding.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
But let me touch on the social media thing one more time. I had a loan closing today with a guy that's in the barber field. And he has to personally guarantee. I know PG is something that you guys hear if you're following business accounts. They say, don't PG anything. You don't have to use a social security number for anything. And while he was doing the loan closing, the banker pointed out, you are personally guaranteeing this. And I said, that is a myth. That is a myth or an exaggerated truth that you do not have to personally guarantee something for a loan or anything for your business.
And so and to piggyback off that, I lease out office spaces and I require a personal guarantee on all leases.
Yes. So I told him, I said, it's my goal this year to host a class to debunk the social media myths around here about applying for business credit and what you're going to use your social. If you're using a paper lender or a traditional bank, like the banks that are in your community, Bank of America, Chase, I'm not shouting anybody out in particular, Citi, PNC.
Yeah.
If you're using a bank like that, you are using your social. Now, if you're using I don't want to name names because I don't want to downplay, like Cabbage or PayPal, where they're not requiring your social security number, they're giving you an advance off of your merchant. So they're debiting your account every day, which kills your cash flow.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that I want to tie that back to the social media comment, how people are getting their education from social media, and it's not correct.
And we're going to have a good discussion on the difference between EIN, which is Employer Identification Number, SSN, which is Social Security Number, and a PIN, which is your Personal Identification Number. Because a lot of that misinformation out there about getting a Personal Identification Number through the Social Security Administration in place of your Social Security Number is false.
Yes.
And could get you in some legal trouble as well.
Back to my point about the social media education.
That's true. So, well, no, I don't. I mean, I wasn't saying I was for it. I was asking, do you think that's a problem that this generation is going to have?
Yes, it's a problem. It's a problem.
Yeah, okay, because I mean, it's getting bigger and bigger. That's the thing.
It's a problem. But I'm saying, yes, racking up student loans, that's a huge problem as well. So maybe take some business classes at the SBA or the Small Business Administration.
Or just listen to
Daniel and Glenda. But get your information from more reliable sources versus somebody you saw on social media. You're getting information from a banker with 26 to 7 years of banking experience. You're getting your information here from an entrepreneur that has ran 6 to 7 different businesses at one time. So I just say, like in college, they say know your sources, incite your sources. Know and cite your sources.
And I'm going to say the one thing that I have done all my life that has benefited me and I would encourage other people to do so is always hang around people that are smarter than you and richer than you.
Yes.
Because you're always going to take away something.
Yes. Yes. And just expand. I'm still friends with people I've been friends with for 30 years, even 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, some of my elementary friends live here locally. But be diverse, you know, get to know new people. It's okay. It's okay. They're not going to kill you.
And don't be afraid to hang around people that don't agree with you. That's the biggest thing. Like, I have friends that I don't agree with politically. I have friends that I don't agree with religiously. There are things that, you know, but it's having a good debate with that person and not getting to the level of anger.
Right. And think about how that translates to your business. Every client is not going to agree with you. Every client is not going to agree with your views, you know, your policies, you know. They may not even like some of your product, but that it allows you to have a different opinion to offer a diverse level of products and services.
Okay, so I got to ask you this because I just saw this on the back of a truck and it makes me shake my head, but it was a local plumber and they had this bumper sticker. It was a political bumper sticker that could be looked at as offensive. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with me when I say, don't put that stuff on your company? Why are you... You're blocking potential customers.
You are potentially eliminating a pool of customers. Now, if you don't want that pool of customers, okay, I guess, but your business will stay stagnant. Money is green.
That's right.
Your business will stay stagnant, you know. But again, if that's your plan for your business, then that's your plan for your business. But you would wonder why your business isn't growing or you're not getting additional clients. Just something as simple as a bumper sticker.
Look,
no, I don't agree you should have that. But that's how you want to run your business. That's how you run your business.
If you don't plan to sit down with them at Thanksgiving, take the bumper sticker off the car.
Right. I mean, right. It's not that serious.
It's not that serious.
Right, right, right.
Oh, my goodness. I think we're learning that. I think with all that's happening in the world, I feel so bad for the younger generation right now because I feel like we're living through many crises too, but I think they're living through so much so soon, so fast. I just feel so bad. My heart is so heavy for this younger generation
But my heart is open and happy for this younger generation because they are the technology-driven generation. Yeah. They have found ways to utilize technology and utilize social media to start businesses and run businesses. So they got a lot going on. They just have to connect the dots.
Yeah, y'all don't have to wait 20 minutes to hear, you've got mail.
Or the dial-up. Right? Oh, I still have my AOL, y'all. Look, I'm not getting rid of it.
I found one of those discs in a box.
Yes, I found one too not too long ago. The younger generation that Daniel keeps referring to has a lot to offer. They don't take no crap. You know, you could be in the office and they're like, why? Help me understand. Mm-hmm. How is this productive? You know, my generation don't ask that. If your manager tell you to do something, you just do it. So I think, again, balance, there's balance to that. But I do applaud them for not just taking the bullshit.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I love the... Okay, I'm gonna get on this because I don't know. I mean, I'm sure we have the time, but this whole I've never been a fan of a 2 weeks notice, and I've never felt like an employee should be loyal to a company because there's no company that's gonna be loyal to an employee, and so I really feel like it's always, you know, they're not doing you a favor by hiring you because you're doing a job that they're paying you to do. So it's a two-way street. So I never understood when I was growing up, I kind of saw this when I was in the workforce, and I would always wonder, you know, why am I trying to earn this love from a company that is going to get rid of me when they realize that their payroll is hitting the bottom line too hard and they can just fire me? So I wanted to ask you what, because I've noticed that a lot of people are not giving 2 weeks notice anymore and they're just leaving. And I'm for it. Like, if you're not happy, and I'm like, the company should take on the responsibility of finding out what it is to retain that employee. Oftentimes, I hear employees are working their butt off, and they're getting they're bringing somebody new in at a higher rate than they have not been paying the person who's been there. So
in certain states like Georgia is a right to work state. And technically, because it's a right to work state, you do not have to give notice.
Right.
Technically. But your manager is going to look at you all funny if you say, I quit today, and try to put on your file, not hireable again. Because, you know, you never know. I always say, you never know what life brings you. You always want to leave amicably. But when I left my job, you know what my manager told me? You know the first thing he said?
What's that?
It was great having you on the team. I said, oh, righty then. It was great having you. Not, what's going on, Glenda? You know, can we talk about it?
Did you have to dust that boot print off your butt on the way out the
what?
Door?
So the 2-week notice thing, I just think it's unfair.
Right.
Because a company doesn't give you 2 weeks notice when they fire you.
Right.
So I think it should go both ways. If a company is going to fire you for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, misconduct, coming in late, excessive absences, performance, they should give you 2 weeks notice.
Yeah, I would love to hear what you guys think on this. If you, I'm gonna put a poll up on our Facebook page, FYI with Daniel and Glenda, and I want you guys to let us know because I'm really curious of what the overall feel is. I mean, it's been back and forth. I'm on TikTok a lot, and I have these conversations with people because I do a whole bunch of videos. Y'all, my TikTok is all about office fun, and I love making fun of HR because me and the former HR departments that I've ever dealt with have never got along. Only because I have a hard head and a big mouth.
Yeah, and he talks about this generation. He acts like them, too. So that's how he used to act when he was in his corporate job.
I think that's why. I think because I really relate to it. I think I was born in the wrong year.
We all? No, just kidding.
No, but seriously, I think it's something I would love to, hear that. So if you guys would, you know, get on the Facebook page and just hit the poll because I'm curious if I'm in the right. If I'm in the right about the majority feeling the same
way.
Well,
I honestly think people now are not even caring, you know, and I think we're going to see a shift in that.
Well, this is also an employee's marketplace right now.
Correct.
I mean, so.
Well, that's what they say. I have a whole nother opinion about that. That's what they say. But I think we're going to see a shift in that. So as employees start to demand more, more work-life balance, more time off, more benefits, you know, more perks. That's probably going to be one thing that's looked at in all states, not just right-to-work states, which is mostly the South.
I'll tell you what else needs to be looked at is paying CEOs millions and millions of dollars and then saying we have to let go people because of salaries or because of hourly pay. I mean, let's look at that. Let's look at those top execs who got these golden parachutes and commit crimes within the company but still get paid $15 to $20 million just to walk out the door.
Yeah, and their bonuses, correct.
Right.
Correct.
And that's called a good employee contract, employer-employee contract. And yes, you can get those done too.
You can, absolutely.
So as an entrepreneur, I believe that when I own a business, if I bring people in, I feel like they should have ownership. And I guess that's how I retain people with my businesses is because after a certain period of time, you earn ownership in the company because I don't really think there should be. I've got a lifestyle. As long as I'm making enough money to maintain my lifestyle, my employee can then make enough money to maintain their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So I love that whole, and I'm not the only company that does that.
But I think business owners, as you know, you're getting through this pandemic, people were not working because they were getting more from unemployment than working. So you saw a big shift of people not working and employees losing. But I think that made employers or business owners come up with things to be more creative to retain. It's not, yes, it's about money. I'm not going to say it's always about money. It is about money because you have to be able to pay your bills, okay? So let's just talk about your regular overhead. Rent, mortgage, lights, gas, car insurance, food, things like that. But then when people feel they have an ownership in something,
yeah,
they are more apt to do a better job and more apt to see that company be successful. So business owners, you know, think about ways and things that you can do to retain your employees because that's one of the top things besides cash And access to capital, as the fancy way to say it, is employee retention, hiring and keeping employees on board. I know my husband has a small business. That's a tough thing in the trucking industry. You know, that's a flighty business. You know, you have truck drivers that are going to the next company just for a dollar. But then are working, you know, on the road all the time and can't get any time off with their family. You know, I have, you know, friends that own a plumbing business that gave stock options and paid benefits and health and insurance and medical and dental, you know, to retain their employees. So, right. You know, as business owners, you got to get creative and you got to think of things to keep and retain your employees.
And that's what I'm saying. It kind of wraps it all up is employers should be finding ways to retain, not employees finding ways to sustain. Because that's what the whole thing is about. And you know, we're going to have a whole topic on, because I really want to discuss this, is Uber Eats, DoorDash drivers, Uber drivers. I want to have a topic on this to show that you are not making money. You are losing money. And when you factor in all of your expenses and the wear and tear on your vehicle and the gas and all of that, you're making less than minimum wage. And I think that a lot of people don't really look at it as a whole. So I want to bring in like us to have an Uber Eats driver in here, because mm-hmm. I want somebody who actually does it, because I did it when they first started out.
Oh yeah, I remember you did it for a little while.
When Uber first came to Atlanta, I drove for Uber.
I remember that.
But they were paying. I was banking about $1,000 a week, but let me tell you, I was working 12 to 15 hours a day. Yeah. And that was to bring home $1,000 a week. And then the prices started dropping and dropping, and the payouts started dropping. And, you know, at that time, too, people couldn't tip.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Uber was steadfast on no tipping allowed.
Wow. Yeah, so. Well, maybe that's how people make up for it. Who knows? So that'll be a future topic where, you know, we'll bring in maybe two, because that's day-to-day money, and people spend it day-to-day. So they don't treat it like, you know, a 2-week or, you know, semi-monthly paycheck. So they're not looking at the expenses the same way. But when you probably truly write it down and keep a formal P&L and balance sheet, then more than likely they'll probably see what that nets out to. But look, whatever ways that you have to do to make ends meet, feed your family and things like that.
Oh, and that's my and that's kind of, I did want to say, I'm not speaking out against the people who do it. I don't want you to think that. I'm just saying work smarter, not harder, and figure out like what ones to decline and which ones to accept.
Right.
Looking at location, thinking about the long. I'd like to cover.
Be strategic about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Giving you the tools to where you know, okay, you know what, if I take this trip and then I figure in all this, then yeah, I'm not going to make any money. Because I know that it you are allowed to, you know, reject certain calls and accept certain calls. So I'd like us to cover that, but also we get absolutely some drivers in here. Well, we are nearing the end, so I want to us to talk about what our next episode and what we're getting ready to do, because I know it's
Women's History Month.
Women's History Month. I couldn't come out my mouth.
Really?
I know.
Y'all get him.
And I'm usually never a loss
for words. It's March and Women's History Month. And we're going to bring on some successful women-owned businesses. I don't have the statistic in front of me, but women-owned businesses are opening at vast amounts. And I definitely want to celebrate. We want to celebrate some successful business owners and all. But we'll have two fabulous, successful women business owners for our next episode. And they'll talk about their journey.
Some very dynamic women.
Very dynamic.
Yes, and we're gonna have various guests, y'all. We're gonna drop a new podcast every 2 weeks in the beginning, probably for the first 6 months, mm-hmm. Depending on our viewership. So I mean our listening subscribers. So we need you to subscribe, because there needs to be a certain number before we can drop one every week.
And we need you to share. Tell your friends, your family, anybody that owns a business, anybody that's looking to open a business. Anybody just wants some refreshing content.
Yeah, absolutely. And follow us. I'll give you my personal stuff. I am the Daniel Scott and then the number 7 on all of the platforms. Or I'm the Daniel Scott on TikTok. I am mostly on TikTok. I rarely get on Instagram or Facebook anymore.
He is always on TikTok.
Yeah. But I'm not always.
He's always on TikTok.
I love TikTok. But yeah.
I have to get up on it. I have a TikTok page, but it's boring. I go on to see his content.
Oh, we do have a Daniel and Glenda TikTok, which we're going to be posting regularly on as well.
Okay, he'll get me into it, y'all.
Yes, yes, yes. And our podcast, Facebook, and Instagram, it's Daniel and Glenda. The website's going to be www.danielandglenda.com, but we have not got the website up yet because we were waiting to drop the first episode of this podcast. So it will be up then. And do you want to give out any social medias there, Glenda?
My Facebook is Glenda Walker. I'm always on there. Glenda Walker is my Facebook.
We're showing you our age because we are Facebook people.
Exactly. I love it. Yeah. I connect with so many people. But you guys, we appreciate you guys listening. We look forward to having you listen to our upcoming episodes. And again, if you guys have any content or any ideas and things that you want to know or hear more about, please just inbox us.
Yes, and we are on every platform, Apple, Spotify, all of them.
Oh, we are?
Yes,
we are.
Oh,
that's cool.
So
make sure if you're listening to us right now, you go down and hit the subscribe button because that's so important because we do love the subscriptions. And like I said, if you do, like Glenda just said, if you inbox us something that you'd like us to cover, we will definitely cover it. And and if you have any questions for our guest, we will always forward those questions over and get them answered for you on later podcasts.
But it's been amazing.
Yes, it has. It's our first one. We are so excited. Number one is down.
FYI, with Daniel and Glenda, let's talk about
it. Let's talk about it.